me as soon as those images of life started coming up on the screen, you kind of lost the clutter that was on the side screen. So I think it's because we're naturally drawn to life. And there is this war that wages in our world, our overall world, and also our inner world, over that which draws us to death and that which draws us to life. And hopefully not many of us or none of us have been in some of those literal kind of riot scenes that epitomizes chaos and thievery and stolenness and brokenness and destruction and killing. But we live stuff like that every day. We feel stuff like that every day. Every day we have these moments of, oh man, I don't think my life was supposed to operate that way. Oh, why did that have to happen? Oh, why is it that I feel like there's something more? Why is it no matter how much I have, I feel depressed? Why is it that I keep buying things and buying things, yet it's like the joy keeps getting taken away from me because before I even use that thing, I lose any sense of fulfillment that I had when I bought the thing in the first place. And Jesus says, this is normal. This is normal. This is called life. But it's not the kind of life that Jesus has come to offer us. And it's not the kind of life that many of us are just standing in line, hoping that the next purchase of the next thing is going to give it to us. God, as opposed to us feeling like we're having life taken from us, I pray that today, this Easter weekend, we'd feel like life is being given to us. Because we're asking you to do something unique in us today, and something that is normal for you, and that is the giving of life. And so I pray that everything that happens in this service, and everything that we think, and everything that we feel, would point to the life that you offer. And it's in your name I pray. Amen. Yeah, all of us have been stolen from, or all of us have even done some stealing. I was feeling this a little bit this last Thursday night at our Holy Week service. Some of you came to the Holy Week experience we had Thursday. Very cool, wasn't it? Except if you came at 5:30, it wasn't cool at all. We thought everyone would come like at 7 or 8:30 or something like that. And apparently a bunch of us decided to come at 5:30. So I got there at 5:30 and waiting for my family to come. I had a couple people from my life group who were there with me, and the rest of the family was about 5-10 minutes late. We were in this line. We were standing in line, and the line was all the way through the atrium to start going through this experience. And then I get to the front of the line, and I see my family come in. The far doors over here, up by the atrium. I said, "Hey, you know, we're up here." And I said, "Oh," so they came up, and I felt so bad because whenever I have somebody cut in line on, it's like they're being stolen from, isn't it? Like somebody has just taken something from me. I felt so bad about it, but I got to have some perks around here, so my family will cut on you if I feel like it, And plus, I was there ahead of time anyway, and I just waiting. But there is this thing where when someone cuts into us, we feel like we've been stolen from. In fact, there's a lot of times we feel that, isn't there? Isn't there? I mean, we feel like we've been stolen from a lot. Or we feel like something's been destroyed, or something's been taken, or something has been killed. First thing that ever really got taken from me that I could identify a value was my 78 Pittsburgh Pirates complete team set of baseball cards. Yes, it was awesome. I loved it until they were gone. And I always thought it was this one guy. I was positive it was him because we were trading and flipping cards and stuff like that. And then, and that was like he needed some of my cards, but they were gone. And I was constantly bothering me. It was a barrier in our relationship. Went all the way through from, sixth grade all the way through. And what do you know, he initiated contact with me a year or so ago because we had a high school reunion that was coming up. And it was great to talk to him. I'm doing email with him, all that kind of stuff. And then sent this email back to him and said, "Hey, by the way, I need to know, did you take my 1978 Pittsburgh Pirates complete team?" And he never responded. He never responded to me. Guilty! Guilty! He stole them. He stole them. Matt Chesnikowski is his name. You stole them if you hear this on the web. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Hey, just tell me, just come clean with me. We get stolen from them, so we feel like there's some sort of violation. Then I had house burned. Destruction. Total destruction. Total chaos. Come out of my house fire. I don't know how to make sense of when house fires happen like they did for me a while ago, or my baseball cards get taken. I don't know how to make sense of why I feel violated when someone cuts me in line. I don't know what to say when I go to a funeral for somebody who has been killed because a drunk driver hit them. An innocent life is gone. The only thing I know is that this is not a surprise. It's not a surprise to me. The reason why it shouldn't be a surprise to me is because it wasn't a surprise to Jesus. Jesus actually said this is the condition of what life is about. We think of Jesus being the kind of nice, lovey-dovey guy and everything, and then he was. But he also, in addition to being high on grace, high on love, as we talked about last week, he was very high on truth. And here's one of the things that he said. He said this, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy." He says there's a person, there's a force. The primary job description is stealing, killing, and destroying. And yet, whenever we're stolen from, whenever somebody gets killed, whenever we're destroyed, we're surprised. Oh, how did this happen? Not new at all. We talked about the very first week about how life has become infiltrated with sin, with evil, and it saps us of our life. It saps us of our ability to experience life the way that God has wanted it to. And Jesus tells us this is the way it is. All of us are walking around this planet with targets on our heads. And somebody's out to steal from us. Somebody's out to kill us. Someone's out to destroy us. And so it shouldn't be a surprise when, as a result of that, our natural brain chemicals don't operate as properly as it should for some of us, and we naturally have depression. Or when our heart gets ripped out by somebody who breaks up with us, or somebody dies prematurely, or somebody has cancer. Jesus says, this is not happenstance. This is not coincidence. There is a force that's out to sap your life, to steal from you, to kill, to destroy. And sometimes life is not as complex as we make it out to be. I want everybody in here to have the kind of life that Jesus wants to offer. The kind of life that draws us to Him. Because we were kind of fixated on that center screen as opposed to the garbage on the end when life came up. And sometimes we can get too intrigued with some of the peripheral issues, some of the peripheral garbage. When I talk with my friends who are still trying to figure out who Jesus is, I regularly get too concerns that people have. One is, life is excruciating. Life is excruciating. And how am I to make sense if there's a good God who loves me when life is so bad? Life is excruciating. As if pain and suffering means that there is no God. No, pain and suffering means that there is God because we know that we're being stolen from. How do we know we're being stolen from? Because we know this is not the way it should be. Yet excruciating things happen. We think it justifies that God doesn't care about us. And Jesus says, no, there's a thief that's coming to steal, kill, and destroy. And we're going to see in a moment, Jesus is the antidote to that. But yet we tend not to take Him seriously because of this problem of excruciating pain. And then there's a problem that many of us have of exclusivity. It's like, you know, Jesus, you're just so narrow. You're just so narrow. And anybody who says that you're the way to life, that's so pompous that I don't want to have anything to do with you because that pompous, narrow-mindedness is just nothing I want to have to do with. It's interesting. When you and I have a problem and somebody comes with a solution, we never say that. You know, when we get stolen from and the policeman comes up and say, you know what, we know who stole from you, we can get your stuff back. We say, you know, that is really narrow-minded of you to tell me that you know where my stuff is. How can you tell me of that? I mean, why shouldn't I go contact the rent-a-cops or whatever? Why, that's so narrow-minded for you to tell me that you have an answer to this. We never do that. Or we have a very unique illness and say Merck Pharmaceuticals comes out with a product that's going to help us. We don't go, you know, Merck, that is so narrow and presumptuous of you to say that you have the thing that can help heal me. What about Pfizer? What about Johnson & Johnson? If you're hurting and someone says, here's a sushi, you go, really? I'll take that. And we'll sit here sometimes and we'll think, oh man, what about the people over in this place? Or what about that place? Or what about the people who haven't heard? Those are all good questions for all of us to wrestle with at some point. It's just that when you're sick, when you realize that you've been stolen from, and you realize you need healing, you don't care about other people in that moment. You said, God will deal with them, but here's what I know. I got polio. I got polio, and Jonas Salk, if you got something for me, I will take that before I start debating what happens with people in Ethiopia who have polio. And see, this is what religion does to us. When you're really into religion or you're into spirituality, we can do all these mental gymnastics, and actually what we're really into is philosophy. We're into philosophizing and waxing eloquent and this and that, and Jesus says, dude, I'm not about that. I thought you can philosophize about me if you want, and you can fit me into your cosmic ideas as you want, and I'll fit in pretty well in some of your ideas. But Jesus, like, I'm not here to be the answer to some philosophical question. I'm really not. I'm here to give life. Do you want life or do you not want life? He says, the thief has come to steal, kill, and destroy. And the very next thing he says is this, but I have come that they may have life. He doesn't say, I have come so that everyone is going to have life. He says, I have come that you may have life. And what's he saying there? He's saying that Jesus gives access to life. He's saying, I give access. It's not a guaranteed thing, everybody. But I'm going to give and I'm going to present access. Jesus gives access to life. I was talking to a friend of mine who in their life group, so they had a doctor in the life group. And they were talking this last week about signs, as we saw in our life groups with the DVD, the, you know, blown by signs. And apparently there's a doctor who said, I see in my practice all the time that people see signs in their life, that their life isn't going well and things are broken and physically something isn't right. And he said, but I know that they don't come to see me because they know that if they come to see me, I'm going to tell them something that's going to have to change about their life. And they would rather not take the risk that something's going to have to change, and therefore they go and they die. It's one of the reasons, I think, why we don't become more devoted to Jesus or become more serious about exploring whether or not He is the access to life. We're like, oh man, well, that might totally mess me over. What am I, yeah, that might completely mess up my mojo. It might mess up my plans. Maybe these things that I'm doing that are giving me instantaneous satisfaction or life in the small doses, maybe we have to walk away from those. And we get all concerned about that, and it's one of the reasons why we don't ever get healing. We're afraid what Jesus might tell us to give up, and He only tells us to give up things that are stealing from us, that are killing from us. They're destroying us. But he gives this access to incredible life. And he says, I've come that they may have life. I've come so that this death and destruction that we feel, we all feel from moments to moments, that we have access to life. And not only access, but look what else he says. He says, I've come that they might have life and have it to the full. Have it to the full. Fill it up. Fill it up. I've come that they might have it to the full. In other words, what he's saying is, I've come that you could have access to life, and I've come that you could have excess life. Excess life. As I thought about that, I thought, maybe I ought to make some nice, interesting little thing called hyper life. Maybe he's come to have hyper life. And as the more I thought about it, no, we all have hyper life already. Don't we? We all have hyper life. Our calendars show us that we have hyper life. The bills that come in the mailbox show us that we have hyper life. The phone shows us that we have hyper life. I mean, I don't know if it's like me, the phone rings like, oh man, not another person who wants a piece of my life, you know? The phone shows us that we have hyper life. The invitations show us that we have hyper life. Our bank accounts show us that we have hyper life. Our debt load shows us that we have hyper life. Our list of obligations, our parties, all these things show us we have hyper life. And yet, what don't we have? Life. We've got activity. We've got things buzzing around. But we don't have this thing called life, this inner, vivacious, green, budding, sprouting, exuding sense of, man, I am right in the midst of paradise where God is. I dusted off all some of my old seminary books. I'm trying to figure out, okay, this word full that's used in the original Greek here in John, what actually is that word? What does that word mean? If Jesus says that He's come that I might have life to the full, what does that mean? I get life like with a lot of new rules? Is that what it is? I get like more obligations? Okay, now I got to make sure I do this, and now I got to make sure. Some of us think that's what God wants from us. He wants us to just layer on over everything we're doing a new code of morality and now get moral and do less of this and do more of that. And it's like, oh, I don't need any more rules. I don't need any more obligations. And so I said, okay, what does that mean? So I went in and I found a bunch of definitions different people have said for what this word is. And I think all of them kind of show an aspect of it. Let's take a look at these things. Just one by one. Here's some of the synonyms for what it means when Jesus said, I've come to have it full, this word full. Extraordinary. I've come that you might have an extraordinary life. Unusual. I've come that you might have an unusual life. Strange. I like that. Strange. In other words, deviant to the mean. Deviant to the mean. Overflowing. Special. Come that you might have an advantageous life. Come that you might have an exceptional life. Come that you might have a superfluous life. a company might have an unnecessary life. So what does that mean, unnecessary? You know, I think it's involved there. It means there's this extravagance with God. God is not a penny pincher. When he comes and gets involved in your life, he's not like Hinch from Heloise, who's like going and recycling Crisco detergent or something, trying to make you figure out how you can, you know, double dip on the different household products you have. So no, it's so unnecessary, and that's what I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to dump it on you. Oh, I care for you so much, I'm going to pop all these things on you. I'm like this all the time. We're doing this Easter basket with my family. You know, the whole Easter thing, I don't get. It's kind of, my friend of mine calls it Easter claws. You know, it used to be that you just had, like, you know, Easter. Now it's like kids expect, like, toys and all this kind of stuff. And so I've got this aspect of me as my wife's going out and buying all this. I'm like, yeah, what are you doing? Yeah. But then what happens? Those baskets come out and kids are jamming on those things. I'm like, oh, man, is that what you put in there? Because I want to bless my kids. I want unnecessary things dumped in there. Superfluous, abounding, overflow. See, a lot of us think that if we ever got serious in a serious relationship with Jesus, that what he does is he just narrows our whole life down and makes a narrowing of our life, a sense of, okay, now I'm restricted. Now I'm boxed in because I got serious with Jesus. Because after all, isn't that what Jesus wants to do, is, you know, strip me naked and, you know, have me living on the street somewhere, you know? Just make us kind of like that. A lot of us kind of went through that whole process with the crazy campaign that we went through. If that's really what God wants from us? By the way, before I forget, there's updates on all the buildings and all that kind of stuff. Interesting, if you want to up crazy space afterwards, make sure you get that. Anyway, we sometimes think that... had a little get a public service announcement in there. Okay. We think that, you know, Jesus narrows us, and here we are. And then what we think is doing God is like walking the labyrinth, walking a maze. Okay, God, which way do you want me to go? I'm going to go through my little halls, left. Okay, I'll go right. And as if we take the wrong step, then our life is all jacked over, and we have no life because we messed up with the person that we did whatever with, or we messed up with the thing we should have done back there. And there's this, we think this the life that Jesus offers is fiction. It's not. This thing where you come to this door that gives access, you kind of go into this door and it's like, bam, you go in and there's just vitality, there's vivaciousness, there's options that are all over the place. There's green things, there's fun things, there's significant things, there's things that actually break your heart and you feel it. And you feel this in the menagerie of life. I had this happen recently. I can't tell you the example because I haven't got sign off, and actually it hurts me so much I don't even know if I want to say it. But one of my kids said something to me recently, and I just went, and they saw it. It's the first time my kids could, this one child could see instantaneous emotional pain on my face from something they said. And I thought about that afterwards, and I thought, man, that really stinks because, you know, 15 years ago, that would have bounced right off me. I'd been no problem at all. And now I'm getting hurt when people say things. You know why? Because the abundant life is that God amps up your sensitivity. He amps it up. And he amps up your strength. He amps up your joy level. Because you come into this room and there's this wide variety of joy. And God says, there they are. Have fun. You mean I can go? Yeah. You mean I can go? Yeah. 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 Oh, it is superfluous. There's stuff that's it's unnecessary, but I like that you have it. The abundant life. It's the life that Jesus has brought. And all through the scriptures, we see this. We see how Jesus brings us abundance. He brings us unnecessary, superfluous, overflowing, exceptional thing. His very first miracle, he's at a party and he wants to keep the party going. We read this in John as we're going through John. He wants to keep the party going. His mom says, hey, please keep the party going. He's like, eh, okay. And he keeps the party going by turning water into wine. Big, huge vats of it, overflowing. There's so much wine. The wine, she's like, oh man, this is awesome wine. This is superfluous, exceptional wine. The best wine. Normally people wait till people are kind of a little tipsy and they pull out the ripple. This time, you pulled out the Dom Perignon right away. Wow. And overflowing. It's abundant. It's unbelievable. He talks about things like water. You know, you want water? I'll give you water that'll cause you to never, ever thirst again. He does these miracles like turning fish and reproducing fish and bread. And when he does it, there's so much left over. People are like, oh man, there's leftovers and I can't even eat anymore. There's stuff left over. There is abundance of stuff. He talks about bread and breaking bread and this is given for you. And he talks about all of these things. Grace. becomes full of grace. All these things throughout the scriptures show that Jesus has not come as the accountant to think small. I like accountants, and Jesus likes accountants. But ones that think small. He doesn't come as the penny pincher. He doesn't come as, you know, Frugal Fred. He comes as, man, life popped up, open for you. One of the reasons I never really got serious with God is all the descriptions I would hear about God when I was younger, things I didn't want to have anything to do with. I would sit in church and hear about, well, when you go to heaven, you're going to be singing in God's choir all through eternity. I'd be like, I hate choirs. Why would I want to do that? I hate choirs, or at least I hate our choir. I hate those things. And it's like, I don't want to be wearing a choir robe. And I would, you know, I think that this was the thing. Okay, good. I get to sing all the time. Well, you know, big, whoopee. No, this is this whole different aspect of eternal life, of abundant life, of exceptional, of unnecessary life that is, bam, put up before us. Driving one of my kids down to the food kitchen last night. CSM went down there, a student ministry, and they're working with those in poverty. And I'm going down and I'm seeing people lying down the streets, just kind of walking the streets. And I had flashbacks when we were in South Africa. And instead of feeling depressed and down and low, I felt, God, how great it is that you invite your people to be a part of giving life. It's so life-giving to think that you just don't want standing on the sidelines and watching and bemoaning. You, one of the things you open up in the room is saying, jump in with me, jump into the world. How great it is, God, that you involve me and you help my heart to break for the things that your heart breaks. People back in the times when Jesus lived, they understood stealing and thievery in different ways. One of the ways that they noticed it was in one of the primary livestock, sheep. And people would go out and watch sheep. And being a shepherd was the grunt work. It wasn't like this cutesy thing. You were just a blue-collar grunt that couldn't get any other work if you were a shepherd. You were the lowest of low. In fact, you were so low, they wouldn't even let you testify in court. And one of the reasons they were so low is because if you had enough money to own sheep, you didn't really want to be tending them because it was a dirty, messy job. You would actually hire somebody to watch your sheep for you. And as people would come and try to steal the sheep, you often would say, I'm not going to get in your way. I'm just going to stand back and go ahead, steal the sheep. Wolves would come like, oh, I'm not going to get in the middle of it. Step back, gone. And Jesus did this weird thing is comparing himself to a shepherd. People go, what? You compare yourself to a shepherd? Jesus would often compare himself to the lowly. Say, even the lowly is abundant and is blessed when God gets involved. And here's what he says in the same discourse about being stolen from and killed. He says this, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I lay him down. I lay it down. Jesus says, I'm different. I'm a different kind of shepherd. I'm the kind of shepherd that stands in harm's way. I'm the kind of shepherd that stands between the thief and you. And I will not move. I will stand between you and the thief, and I will take the hit. I will stand between you and the thief, and I will take the pain. I will stand between you and the leaf, and I will give my life to the killer, to the destroyer, so that you are not destroyed, because I am the good shepherd, the one who lays it down. So many times we can complicate things so much, and we really shouldn't complicate it as much as we do, yet we do. Jesus says, look, it's very simple. We're being stolen from, and we're being killed from. And part of this is because there's a condition of sin that's entered the world, and it's sapping the life out of us, and it infects all of us. And in stepping, but I have to step between you and the thief. And the way I step between you and the thief so that you don't lose your life for eternity, I actually undergo excruciating pain on the crucifix, which is where we get the word excruciating, crucifix. That I will get on a crucifix and the shepherd will lay down his life for the sheep, because all of us deserve to die. All of us. All of us deserve it. All of us deserve to take the hit. All of us deserve that, because all of us have gone after things that God will now have us go after, and justice warrants that somebody takes the hit. And Jesus says, I will take the hit. I will stand between the thief and you, and I will take a hit. I will pay the price. And he says this. He says, my sheep listen to my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I will give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one can snatch them out of my hand. Out of my hand. You know, as I'm starting to talk right now, some of us might have had some philosophical ideas about spirituality and religion and God. And something unusual is happening for some of us. Let me tell you what's happening. Even though I'm not speaking all that clearly and I'm not making an ironclad defense for all of your problems that you might have had with who Jesus is, there's something unusual happening for some of us. You know what it is? You're hearing something you hadn't heard before. You're sensing something you hadn't sensed before. There's some response that you're having. Right. Your mind is going away it normally doesn't go, and you're kind of going, is this one for me? You feel like, you almost feel like, I decide just to speak to you right now. Some people say that to me. It's not me at all. It is that, as one of God's sheep, you are hearing the shepherd's voice. You're saying, there's people, they just hear my voice. There's a unique mark in life. They hear my voice. And they respond. And they hear my voice because I come to you. See, spirituality, religions, they all say, you got to work this, you got to work your life out, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to work, and you got to work. But if you don't, you go to hell, and you have all these bad things happen, and all that stuff. God says, look, this is such a huge issue, I'm not going to put it in your hands. I'm not going to put it in your hands. I'm not going to put it in your hands to come back as a higher life form, and a higher life form, and a higher life form, until you fit. I'm not going to put it in your hands. That's not what the good shepherd does. The good shepherd doesn't say, hey, sheep, become a great person. The good shepherd says, man, I'll take the hit. I'll do the great thing for you. Good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Last time I was at the beach, I think it was last spring break, last summer, something like that. I was at one of these high-rise condominium deals, you know, and got my key. And of course, the keys they give now are all those credit card things, you know, and they never put the number on it. Because, you know, if you lose it, someone's going to break into your, you know, thing and steal, kill, and destroy all your stuff. You know, they're going to go in and do that. So I get the thing, but I was just so excited to get down to the beach that I just got up in the room, ripped all my stuff off, put my suit on, just jammed the key in my little swimming suit pocket, just took off, went down. We had a great time at the beach. Some of us were down there, some of us were still in the room. And after being at the beach, I'm like, yeah, I got to go back. And I went back by myself. So I'm walking back, and all of a sudden, I realized, oh no, what room was I in? I knew I wasn't in the first floor and I wasn't in the second floor, because my rule of thumb is if you're in the first floor and second floor, normally the third floor, just always walk, you know, always walk, because you're going to beat the elevators and you're going to burn some calories at the same time. So I said, first, second, third, you know, I probably did not do those ones. But I remember getting on the elevator. I remember I got on the elevator to come down and all that stuff. So, okay, I was in the elevator. So, well, just to be safe, I'll just start the third floor. So I go up to the third floor going, was this? I'm looking down, I'm going, that doesn't look familiar. I go up to the fourth floor, they all look the same. Exactly the same, all these high-rise deals, right? Same door, same stucco, same painted concrete. Everything is exactly identical. So I'm going, oh, no. So I go back to the third floor, I go to the first door, I got my little key. I go, red dot, shoot. Go to the next one. Red dot. Red dot. Red dot. Red dot. Red dot. Steps. Red dot. Red dot. Red dot. Red dot. Red dot. Red dot. Steps. Red dot. Right? Every stinking floor, I'm going all the way up. I'm like, oh man, this is like, you know what? That is exactly how many of us think God operates. We think that there's some God out there, or there's some spiritual force out there, and I've got to figure this whole thing out. I just got to keep trying something until it works for me. Oh, is that it? No, I got to go. Let me ask you this. If that's really the way of God is, do you really want any part of Him? Come on. If God cares about you, if God is all-knowing enough to know you, He should be knowing enough to know that you need help. And what kind of God would be up there on the eighth floor? I go, man, I wonder if He's going to find me up here. I wonder, oh man, I can't believe it. What a stupid idiot he is. Oh, I can't believe it. kind of God? What kind of God would be like that? And yet we complicate things so much. We complicate it. Finally got into the end of the thing, and I got in there. I was like, ooh, it was great. It was life in there. My family was in there. Beach boards and dinner was kicking. It was family. The only unbelievable message of Jesus. He enters this planet. Into this planet, and he lives a perfect life as only the good shepherd can. He dies an excruciating death, and the evil one thinks that he's been stolen, killed, and destroyed. But life comes with twists, and the twist is Jesus wasn't stolen from, killed, or destroyed, because that was the very thing that all of us needed to keep from being stolen from eternally, killed eternally, destroyed eternally. Jesus does the twist, the magical twist. Life comes here. The whole door, the whole world, the whole ball of wax, the whole vivaciousness, the whole glushness that comes here, and it comes and parks itself right in front of you, the door right there, and says, want access? Do you want access? What planet? Welcome to the life. Welcome to this planet. Do you want access? Do you want life? Jesus could not be stolen from. He could not be killed. He could not be destroyed. That's what Easter's about. It's not about flowers and nice memories and nice thoughts and nice dresses. Easter's about the Good Shepherd lays down his life and can't even lose his life. Comes back. People's lives have been changed for the last 2,000 years, starting with hundreds of people who saw him with their own eyes, saw that come back, and said, I don't understand all that's happening, all that I'm experiencing, but life is here, and I sense it, and I hear the shepherd's voice, similar to how some of us are here right now. You don't have all your answers. You don't have every question that you need to have answered. Given you don't, there's holes and stuff that you're still not getting. You hear the voice, you do. Welcome to the planet of people who come to life in Jesus. Welcome. Sometimes it's really helpful to mark a moment. Early Christ followers have been doing this. We've been doing this for 20,000 years, and this moment. For those of us who want to mark this moment, who for the first time are coming to life, we give you this opportunity where you can move. You can move out of your seat. You can move out of your futility. You can move out of your emptiness. Move out of where you are. You come and you can dig through this dirt, signifying that the dirt that's in all of our lives and the stuff that is concealing the kind of life that awaits for us. You can get a symbol of life, a bulb that will bloom into lushness. For some of us who have not done that, this is your time. This is your time to move. God, thank you for your Son. And I pray for those select few right now who don't understand the voice, who don't understand the dialect, but they sense it. And they sense it in their own dialect. It might not be as extravagant as they hear other people's stories being. They might not be seeing lights, but they're hearing the same way they normally hear other important things in their life. Or even more significantly. For those of us who are like that, just in the quietness of where we are right now, we just say, I receive. I want to get through my dirt. I want life. Jesus, I want to receive your life. To mark this moment for you, if this would be helpful, you can move. You can come down here, grab some life, and go head back to the seat. Us, the life you took back through the resurrection, and the life that you make available to us. Thank you for giving us access to your excess. Thank you. In the name of Jesus, I pray.